Of being a Christian, and it is a great honor that God would deign to let us be at his table, promising us a home with him in heaven, and we are so grateful for that. And what that means in a nutshell is that Jesus rules in our hearts. He rules in the heart of every Christian. In 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, as the apostle begins a discussion, a far-reaching discussion, he starts with the notion that there is, for want of a better term, some authority structure about our life. In 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, at verse 3, he says it this way, I want you to understand that the head of every man is Christ. The head of a wife is her husband. The head of Christ is God. So if we put this into terms that we can understand, what that means is that the child of God, the person who is a Christian, makes a conscious choice to make Jesus the Lord in his life. Now, there are a lot of other things that can vie with Jesus to be the Lord in our life. And I think we understand all of these things. We all have personal desires. We all have a need to have the funds that support our life. We all need to work. We have families and we're a part of family. We have leisure needs, no different than Jesus, who sometimes went to be by himself away from the crowds. And we have friends, and sometimes our friends try to make demands upon us, and they want to be the Lord in our life. If you're a guy and you are in love with a young lady, you know how she can make demands to be the Lord of your life. And I suppose the same thing is true for women, that they feel like sometimes the guys in their life want to be the Lord of their life. But when we make Jesus our Lord, what that means is, in very practical terms, that we allow him to direct every area of our life. So we're going to try to understand that. And I think this decision to make God the Lord of our life has two really important characteristics. Number one, it's reasonable. And number two, it's a wise choice. So we're going to talk about how this is a reasonable and wise choice. Now, I know, and I think you recognize, that most people, if you talk to them about letting Jesus be the Lord of your life, will think that you have made a foolish decision. Most people would question that decision to let Jesus dictate in our life. They'll even call into question your integrity. They'll think you're lying because they don't think that anyone is willing to do that. Anybody ever had that experience? They think it's strange that you run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. I'm sure, well, I know for a fact, that some of my friends with whom I shared a lot of experiences roll their eyes when they hear that I'm a preacher. And they probably think about all of the things that we did together, and I tell them, you know, I'm a Christian. I've been forgiven. This new man's never done those kinds of things. And they roll their eyes and say, yeah, right. I was with you when you did this. And I know that you still do it. And they think that my decision to change reflects only the fact that I'm not willing to do it out in the open anymore. And that's not true. But that's the way people think. That's the way I think about people. Somebody scams me once. I feel bad that they scammed me, but I blame myself. They scam me again. I feel bad. Now I blame them. When they try to scam me the third time, I'm not listening. I know who they are. Well, that's what the apostle said to the Romans in the 12th chapter. Romans 12, beginning at verse 1, he says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed. And that's an indication that you used to be conformed to this world. Now, and we know, he says in other places, such were some of you, but you were washed, you were sanctified. So we used to do those things, but we don't anymore. He says, we're transformed by renewing the mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. So, anybody have a reason why it's reasonable, makes good sense, to let Jesus be the Lord of your life? Anybody? Anybody at home?
He has all kinds of knowledge about things that we don't.
Okay, that's a good point. He can see the future and I can't. Yeah, Faye?
He is always looking out for our best interest.
Okay. Have you ever known anybody else about who you could say that? Yeah, I can honestly say I don't think Kim would ever hurt me. But that's probably the only person I've ever met that I could say that about. Yeah, Charlie? Oh, you're just making a bid. Yeah, go ahead, Eileen. Okay, hang on to that thought. We're going to get there. Okay, but that's an excellent thought.
Dean,
I'm sorry?
Dean, God his life is ordered. It has reason to it, and he can make order out of chaos. And I guess I really need him.
Okay. Good point. I'm surprised nobody mentioned that it's reasonable because he bought us. Think about that for a minute. God not only made the world, but he let Jesus die to purchase us. And that makes it, that when you think about it, that makes it reasonable for me to respond to what he's done. That's not an unreasonable thing. Acts the 20th chapter, verse 28. Remember what the apostle Paul said to the elders of the church at Ephesus? That he purchased the church with his own blood? And because you've been purchased. You ought to respond to Jesus' direction. If, let's just take an example. If you owed $1 million and had no way to pay it, and I were to tell you, I'll pay that debt for you. I just want you to do this. Would you ever perceive it unreasonable if I paid the debt to do what I asked you to do? It's entirely reasonable. I think the basis upon which most people argue that letting God be the Lord of their life is not reasonable is because at its root, they don't think Jesus died for them. If you think Jesus died for you, then everything else becomes reasonable. And so I think that's an important understanding when we're talking to people and we're trying to talk to them about the way that God impacts our lives. We start with the fact that Jesus died. Yeah, Bill.
I think if I'm not so much different than everyone else, that in the beginning, the reason we're saved is because we don't want to be lost. We're thinking about our own salvation rather than anything else. And it's later in life, maybe in a short while, maybe many years later, we realize the real reason is because of this sacrifice. But it's something I thought of. If following him is the only way to have a peaceful and tranquil life, to have peace within your heart.
And I think it's important to say it's the only way to have real peace, because when we don't have peace, we'll settle for something that gets us something that looks like peace, but it's not really peace. If you don't have love in your life, you'll settle for something that kind of looks like love, but it's not really love. If you don't have peace, you'll settle for
momentary satisfaction.
Yeah, I guess momentary satisfaction. Maybe that's a good way to say it. But if you, and I like the way you put it, you know, in the beginning, maybe we respond to Jesus because we don't want to go to hell. And after you've been a Christian for a while, you understand that's really, in reality, pretty secondary. The reason that I do what God wants me to do is because he purchased me. I think about the sacrifice that he made, the price that he paid for me. And so it's reasonable. And there's some other passages that you can look at. Ephesians 1 at verse 14, 1 Peter, the second chapter, and verse 9. And I think we understand the concept that when you purchase, you own. So it's entirely reasonable for us to make Jesus Lord of our life. Now, I want to look at the second idea. Not only is it reasonable to do that, but it's wise to do that. And I guess when we start, we have to think about the concept that Eileen was suggesting, that as a person, I'm involved in a lot of different relationships. And my life consists, in essence, of those relationships that I'm a part of. I'm a part of a family. I have children, I have grandchildren, and I hate to in some ways admit that I'm old enough to have great grandchildren. Maybe I'll get to the point where I'm glad that I have great grandchildren because that means I'm still alive. But we're part of a family. We're part of a social network. We have other people that we interact with that are not, they're not family. They're people that we interact with. And I'm not talking about the folks that you follow on Facebook and the folks that you've never met in your life, your friends with Beyonce. That's not the social network I'm talking about. Okay. And sometimes we get caught up in that. We get caught up in that social network. But in reality, I don't think that even enters into the discussion about whether or not we're a part of that. I don't run in the same circles that Beyonce runs in or Bill Gates. And yes, I friended Bill Gates. And we live in a material world, right? I mean, the world around us is very real. This desk is hard. If I'm driving down the road at 60 miles an hour and I crash my car into a barricade, that barricade is a material thing. And I will suffer because of it. There is a certain philosophy that would say nothing is real. Well, I think that by and large, that's just a foolish approach. We're part of a marriage, right? And that has to be important to us. We know how much that impacts everything that goes on in our life. We work. Sometimes we own our business, like Dean does. Sometimes we're just a cog in a great big wheel in many ways, kind of like Nolan is. You know, Nolan doesn't get to decide when he goes to work. Somebody else decides that for him. And that's just the way it is. We're a part of a work environment. We're a part of a local church. We interact with Christians that live around us. Okay. And again, that's important. And we get to impact that. And because that's a part of our life, and I'm going to give my life to God, I know that God is going to impact what happens in the local church. Just like he impacts what happens in my marriage, just like he impacts what happens on my job, just like he impacts how I relate to government. Romans, the 13th chapter, the apostle Paul outlines his argument there, saying that government exists because it is God's design that it exists. He says it has a purpose to execute wrath on the evildoer. And he's talking to Christians. He says, do you want to fear the government? Do what's wrong. Do you want to not fear the government? Do what's right. It's the way it is. I'm driving down the road doing 80 miles an hour. I see blue lights flashing in my rearview mirror, and immediately my heart is in my throat. I'm driving down the road doing the speed limit. I see blue lights in my rearview mirror. What happens? Go get them. I'm so glad that they're out there on the road. God impacts all of the aspects of our life. That's because there's no aspect of your life that God is not ultimately the author of. Now think about that for a moment. He gave us our families. He gave us our marriages. He gave us the local church. He gave us government. He gave us the material world. I don't think God expects us to withdraw from those things. What I think is God expects us to use those things and let Him be the one who is the decision maker. So a person's life can be viewed as the sum of the relationships into which they enter. Now, here's the thing about those relationships. Somebody is going to be the head. Somebody's going to decide what happens in that relationship, and somebody's going to decide what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. Now, you've probably heard either Kim or I talk about the fact that I don't have a seat on the decorating committee at my house. That's because I'm no good at that. Kim is. Kim has a seat on the decorating committee. I call her up and I say, why don't you look on the internet at this site and you'll see something that I think would look really good. She says, no.
No way.
No, or no way.
That's
it. Yeah, yes. Or reminds me that I don't have a seat on the decorating committee. That's the way it always is. She doesn't have a seat on the, let's see. I get to decide. I'm sure there's one, right? And I joke about that, and it's a little bit funny, but in every relationship, somebody is going to be the decision maker. Okay? And the fact is that history shows when we're our decision makers, when I let Kim make all the decisions for our marriage, we're not going to do very well. That's not because Kim is going to come up short. It's just somebody mentioned earlier, we can't see the future. God does. So because God sees the future, He gives us information like Jeremiah, the 10th chapter, verse 23. It's not within man that walks to direct his own steps. So it's wise for me to understand that if I'm the decision maker or somebody who is my equal is the decision maker in any relationship, and their word ultimately governs everything about the relationship, it's not going to go well. And, you know, if you go to graduation ceremonies, we're getting ready to do that, you'll hear a lot of people say, be true to yourself. That's what's important. Be true to yourself. Well, the fact is that that doesn't work very well. Look at Proverbs, the 14th chapter. There's a passage in here in Proverbs, the 14th chapter, starting at verse 6 that we're really familiar with. But I want to show you the breadth of this passage in Proverbs, the 14th chapter. A scoffer seeks wisdom in vain. Knowledge is easy for men of understanding. Leave the presence of a fool, for you do not know, for you do not meet words of knowledge. You're generally not going to profit from the mouth of a fool. The wisdom of the prudent is to discern his way, but the folly of fools is deceiving. Fools mock at the guilt offering, but the upright enjoy acceptance. The heart knows its own bitterness. The stranger shares its joy. The house of the wicked will be destroyed. The tent of the upright will flourish. There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way to death. There is a way that people think they ought to go, but it's just not going to frequently get them where they want to go. And I can think of no better example of that than the example of Esau. Most of the people that are here tonight are real familiar with the story of how Esau has been out in the field. He's been hunting. He's gotten nothing. He was as bad a hunter as I am sometimes, bad a fisherman, came back to the camp, had nothing. And Esau's response when he saw his brother making some bean stew was, I need some of that or I'm going to die. Do you think that was really true? Hey, Nolan, you were telling me the other day how long a person can go without food. I don't think Esau was going to die. What happened? He let his desire to have some of that porridge rule his life. And his desire to have some porridge ruled the material that he interacted with, and he gladly gave up his birthright. What a fool. If you look at it, he's just described as a profane man. What's it mean to say he's profane? He really has no understanding of what has value. A profane man gets in his car and never checks the oil. Just drives it. And one day the engine seizes up and he says, what happened to my car? Well, you just have no wisdom. Anybody recognize this lyric? No right, no wrong, no rules for me, for I'm free. Anybody know what that lyric comes from? I didn't know either. I read it somewhere. You know who said that? It was Elsa in Frozen. It's in the theme song, Let It Go. No right, no wrong, no wish for me, I'm free.
I remember getting a business card from somebody, but size of a business card. It said basically the same thing. Retired, no job, don't want any, no phone number. I feel like doing something. I lay down until it passes.
Yeah. I think it was your brother that gave me a business card that had that on it. Yeah. Yeah. No rules. Yeah.
Don't follow your own heart to deceive you. Now it says it a little more forcefully.
Yeah, there are a couple of places that talk about that. The heart is desperately wicked. Who can know it? And You're right. It's
something you got to spend some time thinking about.
Yeah.
A lot of times it will pass.
Yeah. Yeah. How much better off would Esau have been if he had just stopped? I don't need the porridge that badly. But he let his passions rule, and it destroyed everything that there was.
If that incident hadn't happened, Jacob probably wouldn't have gone and met his four wives. The 12 tribes would have never been born.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I'm if God has a plan, he's going to work it out. And I'm kind of like Esther's uncle, Mordecai, when she came to him and said, wait a minute, if I do what you say and the king lowers his scepter, it's off with my head. And Mordecai's response was, essentially, God has a plan. And if you do the best you can, and if that's not it, God will still work out the plan. But yeah, you're right. You're right. In the overall scheme of things, that led to the rift between Jacob and Esau, and Jacob has to run to Laban, and he purchases his wife. All those things that happened.
And Esau was still blessed.
There, yes.
Wealth himself.
Yes, he was. Maybe he was blessed because Esau deceived him. I don't know. I don't know.
Because Esau.
Or because Jacob deceived him. Excuse me.
But you know, Esau, or he fouled up, he took his birthright and blessing so lightly. God said, Jacob I love, Esau I hate.
Okay.
And so eventually Esau and the Edomites disappeared.
Okay. Good point. So, me making every aspect of my life something that's a part of God's decision making is in reality, it's a reasonable choice because God owns me. But it's a wise choice. Because if I don't do that, I just create a lot of problems for myself. Now, what that means is, as important as worshiping on Sunday is, as important as worshiping is at any time, it's just a very small part of your life. It's not the area that God controls. God controls every aspect of your life. So, knowing that, the life that we give to God is not what we do inside this building. The life that we give to God is everything about us. So you can't leave here and be a jerk at work. Doesn't work that way. If you do that, you're not making your life a living sacrifice. Okay. So this is a responsibility that's associated with being a Christian. I don't think I've given you anything that's new. Hopefully, I've just made you think about some things. I don't think anybody in this assembly, I don't think anybody in the sound of my voice understands or believes that once I step out that door, I'm my own man. I don't think anybody thinks that. But, you know, it's good to be reminded.